is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to Locked On Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, the host of Locked On Cavaliers, and just giving you a little update on what's to come on today's show. I was joined by Matt Moore from CBS Sports, who covers the NBA for them. He's a great guy, really nice guy. Took about 40 minutes of his time to talk about everything from the 3-1 finals jokes to how LeBron will play this year to the J.R. Smith situation, some little more space talk, everything you could want in a Cavs podcast. Matt provided, and I'm really thankful for him being on that show. Just a little note about what's to come this week. On tomorrow, we'll have a Media Day recap from myself up. I'll be at Media Day later today, and I'm really looking forward to checking that out. And if you hear me talking about Media Day in the past tense on this upcoming podcast, just a little bit of a change in schedule because of some timing issues. And then Wednesday, the mailbag that's supposed to be today will now be on Wednesday. So today, Matt Moore from CBS. Tomorrow, Media Day recap. Wednesday, a mailbag podcast. You can still have time to submit your questions to lockedoncavs@gmail.com. So here's today's show with Matt Moore from CBS, and we'll talk to you guys again tomorrow. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning, from Fear the Sword and Hardwood Paroxysm, and I have a very special guest today. It's Matt Moore from CBS. Matt, how's it going?
Going well, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm really glad to have you on the show. You've been on a bunch of Locked On shows so far, so it's good to add you to the Locked On Cavs guest list.
Yeah, glad to be on. I love the Locked On podcast. They're excellent, so I'm glad to be on this one. I've been wanting to get on this one with you for a while.
Yeah, the Cavs are obviously a team that, despite winning a title and not changing that much, are going to come up a bunch in the next 12 months. But Matt, before we get into some serious stuff, I just have to know, from someone who isn't in Cavs Twitter and interacts with Cavs Twitter a lot, are you sick of the 3-1 jokes yet?
No. No, they are way funnier than any Jordan meme that has ever been created. It's the reason I think that they're still funny is because it actually does hit me sometimes. Like, I will just be like doing the dishes and be like, the Cavaliers came back from down 3-1 to the 73-1 Warriors, who had the unanimous MVP. Kevin Love locked him up. LeBron James made the greatest block in NBA playoff history, and the Cavaliers won the NBA title. And, like, I just sit there for a second and, like, that happened. Yeah. Like, that's a thing that happened. So the jokes are funny, and they deserve to be made, because it'd be one thing if it was, like, the Spurs wouldn't get this treatment. Like,
no, not
just,
at all.
The Spurs wouldn't get this at all. It would just be like, man, that sucks for them. That's all it would be. Yeah. But the Warriors are the Warriors, and they wanted this. This is what they wanted. They said, bring it, and so when they fail, people have, and they're going to have to deal with that until they get the monkey off their back, and that's going to take them a full year. Personally, I hope the jokes continue all the way through next June.
I would guarantee you that they continue to next June, just knowing how Cavs Twitter is. I mean, the former editor of Fear the Sword, Conrad Kazmarek, literally got a license plate with the 3-1 lead on it, so it's going to be a thing, and I think even after it's going to be a thing. I wonder what will die first, Light Years Ahead or the 3-1. I hope Light Years Ahead dies first, but that was also a very seminal moment in NBA Twitter jokes. But we're going to get started with something that I think is maybe the most, for me at least, is the most interesting question about this team, and it's something you brought up when we were trading some emails. It's, what does the rotation look like after free agency? I kind of have an idea about this, but I'd love to get your take on that first.
Well, I think LeBron's going to play a few minutes here and there. Although, you know, I wonder how many he'll actually play in the regular season. I expect his annual sabbatical to South Florida to be longer this year. It took a little bit less time last year. I think he'll take more time this year. He averaged 36 minutes per game last season. I would expect to see him closer to 32, just because they're not going to need to compete as much. It'll be very interesting to see. I'm most fascinated with the rotation in terms of how much are they going to put the foot down? Like, how much are they going to need to? Because they could be way better, right? Like, they've won the title. They know what works. They've gotten used to each other. It's a third-year continuity. Kevin Love's going to be more comfortable. There's going to be more trust. All the trust issues that they had for so long are probably resolved because they're like, no, I can win with you. Like, I know I can win a title with you next to me. So that's going to solve a lot of that. But that also means that they could just be like, this team has screwed around in the regular season the last 2 years. Like, this has been, for a championship contender, it's been a flat out disappointing team in the regular season. Even with their record, this team, there's a reason LeBron was constantly frustrated and tearing what little is left of his hair out over this team, and it's because of the way that they conduct themselves. So, yeah. You know, this is a team that has never really shined in the regular season, except for various stretches. Conrad's going to nail me with all of the advanced metrics on their offensive efficiency past January to whenever in 2015 and whatever stretch they had last year. But there were still long stretches where this team has underperformed. So I think the rotation will be interesting. Like, does that mean they rely more on the youngsters? You know, does Jordan McRae get a little bit more time? Is Kay Felder going to get a few minutes here and there to kind of play a little bit because they're resting dudes? This is also a very veteran roster. I mean, there's a lot of veteran, like, there are veterans on this team, right? You know, Mo Williams, a lot of miles on him. Channing Frye, a lot of miles on him. Mike Dunleavy, who I think is going to play a big role for this team, a lot of miles on him. You know, I think Chris Anderson's going to get quite a few minutes. I think they're going to save, they're going to need to with Mozzie gone. So, you have to kind of conserve those things, and it'll be interesting the kind of tactics that they take with the regular season and where they choose to compete and where they don't. And if that ends up being, is this going to be like one of those seasons with the Lakers where they weren't the number one seed, but everyone knew they were the team to beat? Or are they going to coast ahead and go ahead and win 57, 58, 59, 60 games and put in maybe their best season because they got the huge weight off of their back and now can know who they are and will be able to kind of execute and know themselves a little bit better?
No, I think that's 100% on point. I mean, I'm in the camp with you that they have been bonkers, frustrating to watch at times the past 2 years because, I mean, last year Kyrie was hurt or coming back from injury for most of the year, didn't look like himself. LeBron coasted a lot, and his three-point shot was just terrible. Love's fit has obviously been not ideal, and really he hasn't been optimized. I think the way to answer this for me is if LeBron ends up playing 35, 36 minutes and he goes for the MVP, I think they can get up to near 60 games or above it. If he takes time off, and if he plays, let's say, 70 games, and he plays 32 minutes tonight, and he just saves himself for the postseason, then I think maybe they take that late LeBron Miami approach and say, it's about the playoffs. I kind of think the latter is more interesting just because I think it would give them more time to develop a Jordan McRae, to develop a Kay Felder, because I think that might pay off in 6 months where it might not pay off now just because Richard Jefferson's magic touch might not be there in June again. I'm not a huge Amon Shumpert guy, and he'd have to improve a lot over last year. Mo Williams has basically said his knees have been like this for 4 years, and he's just kind of old, and he's not really that good at this point either. So I think the approach of waiting and taking just time to get everything down correctly would be more beneficial, but I also think if LeBron decides that he wants to just further cement himself and go at it for the regular season, I think a lot of that just kind of gets thrown out the window a little bit.
What's kind of funny is that I will say this, Kay Felder, Jordan McRae, these guys, they've got roughly 3 months to prove they belong in the rotation, because if they don't, this team is definitely going to pick somebody up after the trade deadline when all the veteran waves come in. Like, that's what will happen, is somebody will get waived and they'll bring in the veteran to kind of fill up those minutes. And that may happen anyway. Like, it just may be one of those things where they wind up taking that guy and putting him in anyway. But that's going to happen, I think, because, I think they know, like, we got to have more insurance for Kyrie. Kyrie may be in the best position to play super long minutes this season and kind of take the team on his shoulders more. That may be the transition. I find it very unlikely that LeBron is going to come in and say, I'm going to go out for the MVP, because he would do that if they'd lost the finals. But as it stands right now, like his last statement to us, it still echoes. Like, yeah. That was the most defining, I am the best player in the league, and don't you ever forget it, moment since Hakeem Olajuwon annihilating David Robinson.
Yeah.
It was such a clear statement of power and just a total, destruction of the idea that Steph Curry was the best player in this league. That I don't think, and also just like he's got so many, I don't think he needs another one. I just don't think that that's a priority for him at this point. He's transitioning in the way that he talks about the game. I think he's offended when people talk about other guys as the MVP. I think he thinks he should win it anyway, because people should just be like, well, no, it's LeBron, because he's LeBron.
Yeah.
And that's good that he's offended by that, but I also don't think that necessarily he's going to seek to correct that. And I just think, man, this is so many. I mean, we always marvel at it, but it's so many games.
It's so many games.
Years. Like, he's been in the finals every single year since 2011.
It's like, insane. It's insane.
Absurd. That's just an absurd. And people kind of overlook it because, like, well, he rests and, is it really? And I'm like, think about this. If you're an NBA player like Carmelo Anthony, okay, Carmelo Anthony has saved himself 3 months of games over multiple years when the Knicks have not made the playoffs. 3 months of games have been saved off of Carmelo Anthony's career versus LeBron, who's played, and not just played him, but played 40 plus minutes night after night after night. I think his sabbatical is going to be, he'll play in the Christmas game because he'll do the league that solid. But I would say, like, New Year's, I wouldn't be shocked if LeBron James was off from like January 1st. And then came back after the trade deadline. Like, that,
that would
be
shocking. That would be epic. That would just be an epic. Him just in South Beach enjoying himself.
Yeah,
that'd be unbelievable.
And just, that hamstring. That hamstring's a tricky one. I can just see that happening. Ooh, it's just not quite. It takes a long time to heal. Is he getting treatment? Yeah. Is he here? No. Okay. And then just like random Instagrams again. But the good news is, I don't think, well, I guess maybe the good news and bad news is we're not going to have as many Instagram moments with him. No Batman memes, no subtweeting of the team anymore.
Yeah, it still might happen. This team
I don't think it will.
This team is so dramatic that it they kept saying this after the finals, and I couldn't believe just how open they were about it, that they were so dramatic that they like thrived on it. I mean, they had this quote, where Channing Frye was it was with Dave McMenamin from ESPN, I think. And he was basically just like, yeah, when I got here, I texted everyone in a group text and was like, let's all go to dinner and hang out. And it was like weird that that happened. And there was like these built up annoyances. And I wonder if a lot of that probably goes away because they won the finals and LeBron accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. It's just with him, I just always expect it to happen at some point. And maybe it won't be with the team, but I'm sure at some point this year, it'll be like 11 at night. On a random Wednesday, and he'll be like tweet out a picture of him watching The Godfather, like sitting at home, just kind of relaxing, just kind of subliminally talking crap about somebody.
I would say that I would disagree, and the reason is I've just seen these guys after they win a title. It's one of the reasons I'm not sure that I don't think players that were on the 2011 Mavericks team will ever forgive Cuban for breaking that team up.
Yeah, probably not.
Because when you go through that and you win, you have just such a trust that like. It's weird because it's entirely results based, right?
Yeah.
Like, any number of different things occur. Although I am in the minority that says, like, everyone's like, well, if Draymond plays, and I'm not just pandering because I'm on a Cavs podcast, but I've said this many times, like, no, I think if Draymond plays in Game 5, LeBron still annihilates him. Nothing was stopping LeBron and Kyrie that game. Like, nothing.
No, nothing.
No force of this earth was going to stop those two in that game. But if any number of things go differently. Then it looks entirely different, but the results matter to these guys, and that's how they think, and that's how they operate. So I think that they're going to very much, I think they will very much trust one another, and there'll be a better level of that. The age thing, I think, has to be a concern, though. I mean, you look at up and down. I mean, look at Shumpert, you mentioned, is kind of underwhelming anyway. If he gets hurt like he is prone to do, they're going to be in real trouble on the wings. Like, they're just real light, because Richard Jefferson, like you said, there is got to be a fuse left on that that is quickly running out. I mean, James Jones is on the roster, and that's nice and all, but all of their wings are either injury prone or old, and that's, I think, got to be a little bit of a concern.
I think it 100% is. I think it's why Cavs Twitter is very into the idea of using the trade exceptions they have to go out and get somebody, but that's also, to me, less likely than getting a veteran guy once those waves happen, like you mentioned, because they got Channing Frye because they were able to attach Anderson Varejao's terrible contract to the trade exception, and then Portland saved money by cutting him in that deal. They don't have anything besides Shumpert, really, that they could attach to a small trade exception, or they could use Seti Osman, who might be good in 2 years, or with a 2020 first-round pick to get somebody. Does that get you Trevor Ariza if things go down with the Rockets? Does that get you P.J. Tucker? I don't know. But that's maybe the interesting question. The wing depth, I think, is also the reason why Jordan McRae, I'm convinced he is going to play. Whether it's as a point guard, whether it's as a two-guard, I'm convinced he's going to play. They've spent all this time developing him. I also think there's a chance Markel Brown makes the team out of camp just because they need to. The only way they can really get young guys to develop is by getting him off the free agent wire and getting guys that no other team necessarily wants. A guy like Markel Brown is very athletic, and maybe they believe they can develop him, and that's probably a better alternative than paying Dante Jones for that last roster spot.
You know, they've got only 12 guys on guaranteed contracts, plus Jordan McRae's 13, plus JR is going to be 14. So they're going to have a spot to play with. I think Markel is a good call there. He can play. And if he doesn't, they're going to have options. And again, I just think that you're going to see someone's going to get bought out after the trade deadline. And whoever that is going to wind up joining the Cavs. Like, it will be one of those guys. And, you know, it may wind up being somebody like, you know, Rasul Butler or somebody like that, just like a super journeyman. But that's okay. Like, they can.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
Those guys can work 100% on that Cavs and do what they need them to do. As long as they can hit from the outside and handle, that's fine. You really are just paying them for the experience. You know what the core is going to be. I think that they'll be okay there. It'd be interesting to see if they were to invest in kind of some youth, because I will say it'll be interesting. They're very much riding in with saying, like, this team won a title last year and we're going to try and win a title with the same team this year. That's dangerous. You can get too cute like the Mavericks did, right, with trying to get ahead of the CBA. But that was a CBA matter. Like, Mark Cuban was convinced the CBA was going to make it impossible for teams to keep them together. And I think looking back, he'd probably do that differently. But then you look at the Warriors, and not even if KD didn't go there, if KD had gone to Boston or stayed in OKC, they were still going to look to make major improvements, despite winning 73 games last year, and not just because they lost after beating up 3-1 in the finals with the unanimous MVP. They were always going to really pursue improving. And so I think you have to be kind of like, this year is fine. Like, they can go ahead and try and ride it because LeBron's still LeBron and Kyrie is coming into his own. And Kevin Love, I think, probably earned a lot of points with teammates for his performance. And not just that finals game, but in the playoffs. I think K-Love had a bad finals, but he had a great playoffs. And I think that's going to help them with trusting him. But they are going to eventually need to get some dudes in the pipeline. Like, you got to, if you notice, the Warriors, as good as that young core is, they also, like, they're developing James yeah. Michael McAdoo. Like, yeah. They're keeping their dudes. Like, they believe in Kevin Looney. They drafted Patrick McCaw. Like, they have a younger core that they're going to develop and bring up behind them. And the Cavs have got to start looking at that at some point. They gave up assets in a lot of places to get what they needed, and I understand that. But maybe not this year, but long term, they got to start looking at getting a pipeline of guys that can learn from these veterans and help supplant some of the older guys that are going to be leaving. Like, James Jones can't play forever, I think. Mo Williams is obviously going to be gone. And then you do wonder how long Shumpert's going to be there. Because with Shumpert, it's always been this weird kind of, LeBron didn't actually want him. He wanted JR. And then, like, Shumpert keeps getting hurt and he's frustrated LeBron at points. Like, there's always been kind of this tension with Shumpert. And so I'll be curious to see, if Iman Shumpert is on the team next season is really when I would start looking at that being a possibility.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think they're starting to put people in the pipeline. I think them spending money on Cade Felder to me seems significant just because, A, they had to pay to get the pick, and B, his money's not all the way guaranteed, if I'm not mistaken, but it's a decent amount of money if he's on the roster. And it was also they went out and got him after they had Quinn Cook in Canton with their D-League team, and I think Quinn Cook can play. having watched him a decent amount and watched him play in Summer League, and I was surprised they went with Feld over him. McRae is a guy that I know has worked with Phil Handy a bunch, who is a guy who's really developed Kyrie over the past year and a half or 2 years. And they're trying, but I think you're right. I mean, I think they have to get guys that can develop. I mean, I look at Birdman, and I know he's a veteran guy who played with LeBron, but couldn't you have found a project center that maybe could do what Birdman does this year and hopefully he turns into something in 2 years? It's weird that they need to do that because their window maybe is short, but they can elongate it a little bit because at some point, even if LeBron's older, they're still going to be pretty good if Kyrie and Kevin Love are their second and third best players. And with Shump, to me, and this hits on another point we probably should hit on, but to me, he's the guy that if he actually improves this year and hits another level of some kind, whether that's as a ball handler, whether that's as a consistent defender, whether that's as a at least okay three-point shooter, that's a huge, huge thing because he's under contract. It's a good contract under the new cap. And if he's better, it boosts his trade value, then maybe you can flip him for something better.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
I can't believe I'm saying this, and this tells you about the state of affairs in 2016, but you know, if Shump is able to hit another level offensively, if he puts in a career year offensively and stays healthy, having two defenders like J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert, well, again, can't believe I'm saying that, but that's extremely valuable to be able to play that three-guard lineup. And then not just for what you can do with destroying folks with LeBron at the four or a combo at point forward, but also for those minutes when LeBron's not on the court. Like, you can stagger it. You can play a little bit more with some of the you can play LeBron with guys like Mike Dunleavy and Channing Frye and do some different things versus just – and this is regular season-based, but instead of just having to focus on, you know, hammering teams with your starters and then trying to survive with your bench, it gives you a few more options, and I think that that's, you know, really valuable. I think Jordan McRae can play. I thought he can play for a long time. I liked him as a prospect. I think he's going to be – I think he'll fill into a role very nicely on this team. I think they're going to miss Dele. I do.
I really do, too.
It's funny. It's one of the – I don't – I'm just not into the whole I said this back in blah, 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 blah. I just think it's – who cares? But I did think it was interesting that when the super team formed – with LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin in 2014, my CBS podcast partner Zach Harper and I were talking, and one of the first things we said was Matthew Dellavedova is going to be a really good guy on this team. Like, he's going to play really well on this squad. He showed things his rookie season. Like, that guy can play. And he has since become this hyper divisive figure that people argue about, but he brought a lot to the table, and what he did specifically, being hyper specialized in defense. Specific, you know, end point passing and perimeter spot up shooting that's hugely valuable, especially with where the league is at right now. They maybe have gotten more athletic, but I think they're going to miss him, you know, considerably. I liked, you know, it's funny. I liked Mo Williams at the beginning of last year. I know how hard he fell off, but if Mo can get to a place where he's feeling good, I still think that combo lineups of Mo Williams and Kyrie Irving together might be able to do some damage. I wish they would explore that maybe a little bit more. And maybe they will, just because they don't have a whole lot of options at the guard spots outside of if Shumpert gets hurt, and pending, obviously, the JR situation.
Yeah. Mo Williams can shoot, and I think that's where I could see that working. Maybe McRae can fill that role, too. I don't love what I've seen from him as an off-ball shooter yet, but he hasn't really – when he's played with the Cavs and he played in Summer League, he hasn't really been asked to do that. He's been asked to handle the ball, and he's been asked to create, which is definitely good for his development. But kind of looking at this roster, Matt, do you think there is room for upwards growth and expanding in what they do? Because I think there is, but I think it hinges on a lot of things that I'm a little bit uneasy about.
I think – part of the issue is that their playoff versions of themselves are so radically different from everything else we've seen, and it's happened 2 years in a row. I don't know how to judge what the Sears-Cavs team is going to be, because it's like, if it does carry over their playoff version, they could be awesome, but they don't play that style or approach or way or effort. Like, it just doesn't, it's just not that kind of way. That's really their best hope, is that just the time together. Continuity makes you better. Like, it just does. Continuity makes you better. Chemistry makes you better. They're going to have better chemistry because they know, like, hey, we want a title together. I love these guys. It makes you love one another when a guy gets you a ring. Like, that just changes the way that you view them. So I think they can play together and improve from that perspective. And when you know how to trust each other, that helps. The other key here is it may actually help them. Here's an interesting idea. They may not be as sharp as they were in the regular season last year, which is terrifying, but they may actually win more games. The comparison I would use is the 2010 Celtics. That 2010 Celtics team in the regular season was not good. I don't mean that they were not great or not elite or not good. They do not qualify as a good team. You watch them and you were like, this team is gross. They don't know what they're doing. They're like, they're just bearing it through these games. Like, they are barely alive. Like, this is not a good team. This team is going nowhere. That team made the finals and was one game away from a title. They won 50 games that season because just playing together and knowing how to play defense and knowing how to win games and find ways to win was enough to get them there. So I think the Cavaliers are going to have that kind of capacity where you look at them and you're like, they're old and they're slow and they're sluggish and Kyrie's still chucking and this shouldn't work at all. And then you look up and you're like, oh, they won 58 games at the number one seed by three games. Huh. I could see that happening.
Yeah, I could too. And I think the things that are, I think could lead them to a better regular season would involve Mike Dunleavy's back staying okay, which back injuries to me are a little, you know, I needed to see it. Shumpert being good, because I'm just really, hey, he hasn't been good really. Last year especially, he was not. And he was hurt too, obviously. Kyrie to me is the guy that if he has a big year and he takes a step forward and does some things better, not only just in how he's perceived, but in what he actually does, I think that would have a huge impact. I mean, if LeBron is only playing, let's say, 32 minutes a game, and he takes a long sabbatical, and he goes and just relaxes, Kyrie, to me, is the most likely player to fill that vacuum. I would love for it to be Kevin Love, because I think that would be more interesting, but I don't really believe that it's going to happen based on what I've seen for 2 years, even if it makes sense for it to happen now. So I think if Kyrie has a huge year and he can become a better defender and he can become a little bit more judicious with what he does with the ball and he isn't as, you know, dribble and takes a bad shot every other possession when he's just kind of not at his peak, I think that's a way they can really improve. And if Richard Jefferson is good, they can do these fun things with small ball lineups with their bench units. Like Shump, to me a fun lineup would be Shump, Dunleavy, Jefferson, LeBron, and Channing Frye. Because at that point, Shump's the worst shooter on the floor, and defenses have to respect him at least a little bit with Fry and Dunleavy around, so, or they would ignore him a little bit. Maybe that helps him, but I don't know. I don't know how. I think this all really comes down to, do they take the regular season seriously, and do they care if they finish behind, let's say, Toronto and Boston?
Yeah, how important is home court advantage to them? Because, I mean, they know they can win in Boston. They know they can win in Toronto. I don't think they're scared of Boston at all.
I don't think so either.
I just don't think that they're, like, LeBron. I think LeBron's going to look at the Celtics and be like, I faced great Celtics teams. You, sir, are no great Celtics team. I think they're likely to coast a little bit more. It's just, it's hard to maintain that edge. There's a reason the Warriors invented all that nonsensical disrespect last season. Because otherwise, like, you do, you start to coast. I think, again, though, they'll find ways. Like, the Pelicans lost last year. That was always one I went back to, and I was like, that's such a bad loss. Like, it was just the first night when they had a back-to-back, the second night. They should have won that game. They should have beaten the crap out of the Pelicans. I kept going back to that game and being like, you should have won that game. Like, that's a game that championship teams win. Well, apparently not, because they won the title. But I don't think you're going to have as many of those. I don't think you're going to have as many of those, like, oh, that's just a bad loss. I think that the number of bad losses for Cleveland will reduce dramatically, and that will help. Kyrie, I will say this is interesting. I've hammered him just hammered him, because I really thought, like, after when he came in as a rookie, and I just watching him as a rookie, I was like, this is, I loved him as a prospect too. I was like, this guy is going to be amazing. As a rookie, I was like, this is going to be the best point guard in 5 years. In 5 years, Kyrie Irving is going to be the best point guard in the league. Now, Kyrie Irving is the only championship point guard in the league, but I don't think you'd find many people that would say he's the best point guard in the league. That said, I'm a little obsessed with point guards and how to run offenses and learning the position. Yeah. Most of the point guards I've talked to have said it takes 5 full years for you to get it. This is going to be a 6th year. He's done it for 5 full years. It takes you 5 full years to know how to get it. And much of his early career was spent with, you know, that team. And also he was injured. All the time. So, you know, I think this is a real opportunity for him to grow into the role. I also think probably winning the title and having made the game-winning shot as a team for the team that won the title in a coming back down from 3-1 versus the team that won 73 games of the unanimous MVP, I think that's going to probably take a little bit of the pressure off of him, and maybe he'll be like, no, I can get some other guys involved. Like, I don't feel the urge to, like, get mine. He's always going to look for his, because that's just part of his game. But I could see him becoming a little bit more of a, I can not try as hard in this game by setting up players instead of just disengaging or not being there. And that balance is important. And Chris Paul had done this. Chris Paul would have years where his knees were just feeling like hell, and he would have long stretches where Chris Paul would just set the offense, go into the corner and take his time and be very opportunistic. And it helped save his energy for the playoffs when he was great. Like, this is not a bad thing to do. I think Kyrie's got that level of development in him to kind of take to the next level. I think he'll be a better game manager this season, even if it's not necessarily going to be reflected in his assist numbers.
Yeah, I think that's the ideal situation. And I think considering where he's at, considering, you put this very nicely, considering what his first couple of years were like and who he was playing with, he turned out pretty well. It's funny that he actually just turned out functional, considering he was coached by Mike Brown and coached by Byron Scott and Deion Waiters, and those first couple of years were just really, really rough.
I don't know. I'll still cape for, no one on the national scene was as critical of Byron as I was. Like, I was writing every night, what is Byron Scott doing? Why is this happening in LA? I still think that he doesn't get enough credit for how he helped Kyrie and, to a degree, Deion in those first couple of years. I really do think he made it better, made them better. You just didn't see the results. I really believe that based off of talking to multiple people involved in the situation. I think there were concerns there. But, yeah, I mean, look, you look at that roster, his second year in 2013, and just, like, up and down the road, like, John Luehr, C.J. Miles, Chris Quint, Samardo Samuels, there's a name. Most Bates, Tristan.
The most Bates half a year was the first year that I just had random fun. That was one of the first years I was a blogger, and it was like the most Bates trade, and then the Spencer Hawes trade a year later, I think, were just the most fun. Those teams actually became fun, and I was like, oh, this is what, like, competent pick and roll basketball looks like.
Yeah, most funny. I loved him in Philadelphia. His rebound rate was, like, astronomical, and I kept, like, screaming, like, why doesn't Doug Collins play this guy? His, like, per 36 rate is astronomical, and it's hilarious because he's become a rotation NBA player that, like, doesn't rebound at all. Like, all he does is shoot.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, like, all Mo Buckets does is try and get buckets. Jeremy Pargo, the Cavs were one of the enactors of the Pargo rule, mm-hmm. Which for several years stated that there had to be one of the Pargo brothers in the NBA at all times. The Cavs were one of the inactive. Wayne Ellington, key player on the 2013 team. Kyrie had a rough go, but that said, I think some of the criticism was okay. Like, I remember when Kyrie wasn't like didn't come out and greet the fans on Fan Appreciation Night. Like, I remember how there was, like, real talk about his attitude. And to be honest, like, that was like the rep around the league too. Like, there was a lot of noise about Kyrie's really into the NBA lifestyle and not so much into the idea of winning games.
No, he's a very aloof guy.
But, you know, look, he made the game-winning shot for a team to come back from 3-1 and win the NBA title versus a team that won 73 games with an unanimous MVP. So, no matter what, like, to a degree, this is a part of it. This is... Even though there were guys on this Cavs team that I've criticized, and then there's LeBron, who I've always kind of like been like, no, we need to appreciate how great he is. The same thing goes for LeBron as it does for those guys, which is everyone that's criticized them has to shut up, and that includes me. Like, everything I've ever said about J.R. Smith, like, nope. I am a hater that has been silenced, because Like, they shut up everyone with their performance last season in the playoffs.
Yeah. I think you'll still see some criticisms that are fair. Like, I mean, I think Kyrie, to me, is the most fascinating one just because I think he plays at the league's best position, deepest position, is a better way to put it. And he's kind of clustered in a group of other very good guards in Lillard and Wall and Conley and Lowry. And one of those guys could break into that top three grouping, but it would take something. But before we kind of wrap this up, Matt, is there anything you learned from last year about this team, whether it's from the regular season or the playoffs, that you think carries over into this year?
Hmm. Let's see. The biggest thing that they actually taught me was they taught me that probability does not mean inevitability. Because I had, as many Cavs fans were sick of me saying, like, I was just like, this is over. Like, the Warriors are going to win. They don't lose. Like, eventually they're just going to hit more shots than you. Like, they don't lose. They always win. And they didn't. So that really taught me a hard lesson about, look, no matter how probable something is, that doesn't mean the outcome. That's sports. And you got to remember that. No matter how far you get down the X's and O's and the matchups and everything else, like, you still got to go out there and do it. And if you don't, the other guy's going to come out there and take it from you. And that's exactly what happened. As far as this team goes, you know, I think they taught us that – they taught us a bunch of things about the guys individually, I think, is the big key. Because there were the playoffs actually taught us a lot about them more than the finals did. Like, that's kind of the thing, is like the finals leave this weird kind of vertigo because of down 3-1 and then those last three games, which were just berserk, insane things happened every single second. But, I mean, look, you know, Kevin Love really stepped up huge in a lot of those playoff games. Like, he came out with some big performances when they needed it in some of those games. I really think that Tristan Thompson continues to be underrated. Like, he was vital to that team last year, especially in the playoffs. He gave them key performances and deserves that. I learned that Channing Frye can still defend, which I didn't think was possible. I learned that you can rely on J.R. Smith. I didn't think that was possible. And I think more than anything, the biggest thing that we learned about is you cannot ascribe a ceiling to LeBron. You just cannot ever say, well, he can't do X, because he did. He defended this unstoppable pick and roll combo with the death lineup and disrupted it to a degree where it melted down and started crying to itself like a little boy whose ice cream had fallen off the cone. He dominated from every single range. When we said his jumper was gone and never coming back, he found it and drove it through the craniums of everyone that had said it was gone. There is no limit to a player of LeBron James's greatness. And so if anybody says, well, he can't do, I can't say that anymore. You just can't say anything is impossible with LeBron James after what he accomplished last season.
Yeah. I think that's a very good lesson, just because what he did in the finals is probably the best. As just someone who grew up in Cleveland and saw how people reacted to it and how I reacted to it, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen in sports. That block, when he fell and hit his elbow, and he just was like withering in pain, and then hit the free throw. Kyrie's shot, Love's stop was just, that to me is just the funniest thing that ever happened, because it was the one situation that you would expect him to just get destroyed in, and it's the situation that if it would have went really badly, people would have been like, oh, that Wiggins would have defended him fine there. And I've had people say that to me, like, oh, if that would have been Wiggins, would have been a bigger deal, or you know whatever, but. It's just that happened, and it's almost like that gives him just some freedom to kind of just feel normal for the first time in 2 years, which I think will be kind of interesting too.
My the game 7 was Sunday the 19th.
I believe.
I'm sure of it, actually. And the reason I'm sure of it is because my wife went into labor on Saturday the 18th at 6 a.m. and my daughter was born later that morning, and I got home from the hospital after a sleepless night in the hospital with the newborn. I got home the next day at 5 o'clock, and the game started at 6 o'clock Mountain. And so game 7 is still this very surreal event to me, where I'm like, again, when I say I stop myself, I really do, because I'm still processing what happened. I'm still trying to be like, wait, Kyrie Irving like crossed over and rose up in Steph's face and buried the game-winning three. Like, LeBron covered a galaxy of space to block the most incredible block we've ever seen, in part because of J.R. Smith's really good help defense. Like, and then that scene, like, I didn't believe that the Cavaliers had won the title for a good 10 minutes afterwards. Like, I watched them celebrating, and I was like, this is surreal. It felt like a dream, just because it was such an incredible comeback. And I feel like, because I often struggle with this, because we ascribe a lot to sports, right? Like, we're passionate sports fans. We're talking on this podcast about sports. And there are more important things going on in the world. Most of them terrible every single day. But what's really crazy is just that, like, we had to move on, right? Like, the next day happened, and then, like, NFL free agency, and then, like, the NFL, like, right now, it's like the NFL season started. And I keep wanting to be like, no, we have to stop everything. Like, do you understand what LeBron did? Like, do you guys get what happened? The Cavaliers from Cleveland, the most sports-destroyed city on Earth, came back from 3-1 and beat the 73-win team with a unanimous MVP. Like, that happened. That's a thing that occurred. And so I still kind of struggle with the reality of it. And it's what makes it such an incredible story. And that's why, look, this season, no one is going to count them out until they lose four games in the playoffs, whenever that happens. No one is going to count them out. They've earned that right as champions, and they earned that right because of what they did last year. But if they do lose, it doesn't matter, because in all honesty, nothing that the Warriors can do will be a better story than what Cleveland accomplished, and that is the best NBA story, realistically. And as far back as I can remember, maybe ever, is the best NBA story you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, that's a very eloquent way of putting it. In the city still, people are still just can't really believe it. It takes a lot of the frustration with the Browns away because of how well they've been. It feels really dumb to say it, but it really has just changed people's mindsets that I think were just incredibly pessimistic and incredibly just in these very dark sports places because of what Cleveland's sports history looks like. And it's just kind of, it's still kind of crazy. Like, I was in Norway for about the first half of the finals on a trip, and I came back, and I was like, oh, they're totally going to lose because of how it played out. And I'd stayed up and watched the games and all this stuff, and I still really can't believe it. I have not watched Game 7 again yet, because I kind of been waiting till right before the ring ceremony happens. And I'm going to watch it like 2 days before that, and then just kind of get in that headspace to kind of process it. Because when that ring ceremony happens, I just think people are going to freak out again, and it's going to be crazy. Parking is going to be like $100 downtown, especially if the Indians make the World Series too. But we're going to wrap it up on just three quick hitters, Matt. And I thank you again for coming on the show. First up, J.R. Smith hasn't signed yet. Do you think it's a big deal that he hasn't re-upped with Cleveland yet, with Media Day having already happened?
Nope, standard procedure. It's just clutch sports and how they do things. Everything takes five times longer than it needs to.
Fair enough. Over-under on what he signs for, $12.5
million. Over.
Yeah, I think over, too. I think he's gonna get 14. I really do. 14 or 15. And lastly, how many All-Stars do the Cavaliers have this year?
Oh, God, that's a good one.
I think three, personally. I think it's going to end up being three. Perception really is going to help them this year.
One.
Ooh, being LeBron, obviously.
Yeah, not Richard Jefferson. I guess here's the thing. I'm not taking Isaiah Thomas a spot away from him. I'm not taking Kyle Lowry's spot away from him. I'm not ruling out that Kemba Walker can get there. Like, there are a lot of guards.
So many guards.
That can get there. Look, if you told me the Cavaliers had three All-Stars, I'd be like, not surprised at all. But I have to kind of, until I see it happen, I got to believe. The popular vote will be interesting. That's going to be an interesting one. A lot of it depends on just how Kyrie's season goes. He's very popular. Now, you know what? You've talked me into it. I'm like, no, his shoes are so popular. He'll get in. They'll have two. It'll be him and Kyrie. I don't think there's any way Love gets in.
Yeah. I think the love thing could, it's possible if they promote it enough, but it'd be a long shot. I'm feeling optimistic right now about it, but we'll see. So Matt, thank you again for coming on the show. We really, you're a busy guy and appreciate it, but where can people find you on Twitter if they aren't, you know, already following you, because they probably are if listening to this podcast? And are you and the rest of your crew over at CBS kind of working anything that you'd like to tease?
Oh, we're going to have complete coverage of Media Day from all around the league. I'm going to do a thing on camp battles here in about 10 minutes. So I'm writing on that tonight about various spots that are going to be open that people that guys will be vying for in camp. We'll have lots of coverage just from the continuing season as it stands. We got some fun stuff coming up. You can find me on Twitter at HP Basketball. If you don't prefer volume, if you like selected, just want to follow my work, you can follow me at Matt Moore CBS. The account is a little bit more sane.
Matt, before we go, I just have to ask, what are your mentions like at the HB Basketball Con on a day-to-day basis? Because I just can't imagine they're a pretty sight.
You know, it's not that bad. Like, I've become less of an agitator, and I've become less of a, I have kind of peeled back a little bit of what I do, so that helps a little bit. There's always some crazies, and it's always entertaining. I try not to entertain them as much as I used to, because I found that people don't really like that. I actually will say that I get a lot of, like, hey, really enjoyed the article, and I don't, like, those I don't retweet, because what kind of a jackass do you look like if you're like, hey, look at how much people like me? But I always appreciate those comments. It means a lot to me whenever anybody says I enjoyed your work, because most of what I do on Twitter is I share the research that I do when I'm writing for a column. It's like, I kind of bounce ideas out there and see what the reaction is. So I still like Twitter quite a bit. I have a love-hate relationship with it, but I've kind of come to peace with it. And I really always appreciate the fact that anybody takes the time to listen to anything I have to say.
Yeah, it's a very interesting space, and there's some definitely pros and cons to, like you kind of alluded to. But make sure you follow the podcast on Twitter at Lockdown Cavs. You can find me on Twitter at CWM Writes. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. So thanks again for listening. Thanks again to Matt for coming on. This has been Lockdown Cavs. Talk to you soon.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.